This is Dr. Richard Verone. I'm continuing my oral history interview with Mrs. Sandra Craig. Today is August 17, 2004. I'm in Lubbock, Texas at the Vietnam Archives interview room on the campus of Texas Tech University. And Sandy, you are in West Virginia. Where are you now?
I am in Canaan Valley, West Virginia.
Okay, very good. Sandy, you mentioned to me before we started recording that you had a couple of extra items to discuss relevant to our previous discussion. So why don't you go ahead with that?
All right. When we were in VA-115 living on Whidbey Island in Washington State, I happened to think about the fact that two of my very good friends who have stayed friends, become lifelong friends, were both from the South. And one was from Texas, one from Virginia. And we brought to that squadron a sort of a different lifestyle that all of us had been a part of. We were all the what was then called the hat and glove crowd, and you didn't go to a luncheon or a meeting of some sort without being dressed appropriately.
Okay,
that wasn't true of the women we were with. Most of them, they understood casual. For us, casual was going to the beach, or something of that nature. We were made to feel different. I'd said I was made to feel different up there in the first place.
Yes.
But we were made to feel different once again. And I think that besides the fact that we actually enjoyed each other's company and came from similar family backgrounds, we were thrown together even more because we knew the little niceties that many, and I would say most, of these young women either didn't know or and hadn't been raised with, or had chosen to let go. That was that was an outstanding thing for all of us. We all dealt with it, and I think we dealt with it very well. And quite frankly, we brought them up to our standards. They all learned what to do with a tea and enjoyed it. It was, for most of them, it was the very first time they had anything to do with finger sandwiches and petit fours. Anyway, it was they learned how to talk on the phone because all of us were sick of bad manners on the phone. There were many things of that nature that we passed on, and I think we did it very nicely.
Okay.
And kindly, but we didn't feel that they were being very kind to us.
Okay. Well, let me then ask a maybe more difficult question. When you saw the squadron again in January of 2004.
Yes.
And I was there. And,
yes.
Of course, I was unaware of all of this.
Right.
But tell me what it was like to see these women again after so many years.
Actually, if there had been any animosity, it was all gone. It was for the most part, a very kind and shared remembrance type of feeling. It was, we had all moved on so far that any of these very young things were very much in the past. And just the basic niceness of people came through, which was really, really pleasant.
Were you worried at all that it might not be that way?
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. I think it's because, partly because so much time had passed.
Right.
And partly because I've come a long way. I did a lot of growing up in Whidbey, as I've said before, that first time. And I learned that I just... It was better for me to be me. And those other women were probably doing the same thing. They were just being themselves.
Okay. So So it was a pretty congenial atmosphere.
It was a congenial atmosphere, and it was so interesting to see how people had grown and developed. And I was sad to see some of the people who weren't there. I was sorry that they could not come or had not come.
Mm-hmm.
But for the people who were there, it was just really nice to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. Pam and Al LeGros, he was the AI.
Mm-hmm.
They were quite young when we were in the squadron. We weren't old. And we all became good friends then. Our friendship passed all background or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make any difference. There was no edge to Pam. She was absolutely charming.
Hmm. Okay.
And lovely and intelligent. And so we have remained friends, and they live on the East Coast.
Right.
And we've kept in close contact over the years. So, you know, there certainly were and are very bright spots, and I would bear none of them any animosity,
mm-hmm.
absolutely none, because it was a growing time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, as I've said, sort of a difficult time, and looking back on it, it was probably a growing time for them, too.
Right.
So okay. That's sufficient about that, I think.
Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we move forward?
Yes.
Okay.
There was an article in either Woman's Day or Family Circle, and I cannot remember if it was in the 1970s or it was in the late 60s. But I remember vividly that it dealt with the life of an enlisted wife,
mm-hmm.
during the cruise time, and the excitement, and what her plans were for the return, and I think that if someone were to do research, I would suggest them to that you know, to find that article. And it was in one of those two magazines, and it shouldn't be too terribly difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
Then did Kenny tell you about a letter from his sister that he received in the 1960s about Vietnam?
No, I don't think he did.
Okay.
Why don't you talk about that?
It might have been in the 70s. She was married in 1971 and moved to Australia, and I cannot, this must have come after she moved to Australia. It was his older sister, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
She was brilliant. She's now deceased of cancer. But she was very much against the Vietnam War, and she did not express that. She was very supportive before she married and moved to Australia, and I
mm-hmm.
have no idea what happened to make her this way. But after she got there, she wrote Kenny a devastating letter, calling him a baby killer.
Mm.
It was just dreadful, absolutely dreadful, it was interesting that her husband and his family did not share her feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But she demonstrated against the war, and we could stand that, but this letter just was terrible, and she never apologized for it.
Really?
Really.
Was it brought up? After the war,
yes, the two of them had quite a discussion about it.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What effect did you see it have on Ken?
Oh, it was like somebody had punched a hole in his balloon.
Hmm.
This is his big sister.
Yes.
It was pretty devastating for him. In fact, I was when I learned about it. I was quite concerned that it might have an effect on his flying.
Mm-hmm.
But I should know my husband better than that, because he was able to put that aside. And I think, if anything, it strengthened his resolve. And it showed him for the very first time that his sister wasn't all that brilliant.
How did you feel about it?
Oh, I was just absolutely livid. Absolutely livid. She and I never discussed it. She never gave me the opportunity to. Our conversation was always kept very light.
Mm-hmm.
On purpose. And because I realized that she was going fully on emotion, that there was nothing factual in her discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, too, that I needed to keep the family conversation lines open.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was not my place to bring this up. And since she didn't bring this up to me, then I just let it go.
Right. Okay.
But anyway, I thought that should be noted.
Okay.
Then in Jacksonville, when we were with VA-72,
mm-hmm.
I know I spoke about a peeping Tom, but
yes.
I also had harassing phone calls.
Really?
I never figured out if it was anti-Vietnam or if it was, if you would, sexual or, you know, bothering
mm-hmm.
that way in,
mm-hmm.
in nature. But I talked to our CO's wife about it, and she gave me a reply to give them, and when I did, the phone call stopped.
What was the reply?
The reply was because usually it was just heavy breathing after the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
And or just no one there. I said, "Don't call me again. I'm recording this, and the judge will have it if you do." So I slammed down the phone, and I never got another call. We were also told at that point, all of us were told, because many of us were getting that type of call, and we were all told to get a whistle and blow it into the phone, because it would break their eardrum. And, you know, that would take care of it.
Yes.
This is before I got the whistle.
Right.
And I never had a problem again in Jacksonville. However, VA-115 was, apparently, there was a list, and it must have been an air wing list, taken from the hospital administration office when we were there with 115.
Mm-hmm.
And that was discovered missing. And the admin officer contacted the CO's wives of all of the squadrons in the air wing,
mm-hmm.
who were at Whidbey, and told us what had been done, and if any of us received any harassing phone calls, to let them know immediately, and they would take action. And they worked out how, you know, the details
mm-hmm.
of how things could be done.
Mm-hmm.
Whidbey Island at that time was very small. The Navy community was small. The community itself was small. They still had party lines. So it took several months to get a single line. So that worked in our favor. We all used the whistle. I never got any calls,
mm-hmm.
but I know that there were people who did, and that the fella who had, it was a Navy fella,
mm-hmm.
who had taken the list, was caught and was brought to justice.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so... let me see, and then I will end with something that will bring us up to where we are.
Okay.
I had talked about my reaction in San Francisco to my letting out of all my anxieties. I think I would like to describe that as the release of almost 10 years of pent-up anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We lived on a honeymoon basis. We lived from honeymoon to honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do that for 10 years straight and have a regular, normal marriage because you don't go through the discussion that leads to arguments or arguments that lead to discussion, the normal interplay of a normal marriage,
mm-hmm.
in that kind of environment. And I think that was what led up to my having this severe reaction to holding all that in.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Anyway.
All right. Well, we had made our way through Monterey in 1974, and Ken was getting ready to be transferred to Norfolk,
mm-hmm.
to Staff College.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that transition back to the East Coast?
Oh, we were so excited. It was just absolutely wonderful. We were going to really miss Monterey because that had been spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift to be given that 18 months as a couple, as a family, to just let life become normal. It was wonderful and in such a beautiful, beautiful setting. And we were thrilled to be heading back to the East Coast where our families were. My parents were still in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny's father and his stepmother were in, I can't remember if they were living in Blakely, Georgia, or still in Jacksonville. But they, shortly thereafter, they built a house in Maggie Valley,
mm-hmm.
North Carolina, which put them very near us. One of my sisters was living in Norfolk. Her husband was in the Army, and not far from the Staff College, so I knew we'd get to see them frequently. One of my other sisters was married to a naval officer, and they were stationed at the hospital, the Naval Hospital, down at the Marine Base in Jacksonville, North Carolina. So that was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny's other sister, younger sister, and her husband were moved to the East Coast about that time. It was just a little bit after that. So it was wonderful. We just had, we felt like we had the best of all worlds. That was just a terrific move,
mm-hmm.
and Staff College was really fun. It was the first time we had been with other services, and of course at that time service families were put with each other,
mm-hmm.
and that was a healthy atmosphere, really was.
And Ken enjoyed himself there at Staff College.
He enjoyed himself immensely. He really, really did. It was just a lovely time.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
And you ended up staying there, didn't you, for a couple of years?
Well, we had to move out of Staff College.
Right.
You were only invited to live there for during the 6 month period of the classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you absolutely had to move. So we had 18 months before we left the East Coast. By the time we left Staff College, we knew that we were headed back to Whidbey Island.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not for 18 more months.
Right.
So we purchased a house in Virginia Beach,
mm-hmm.
and enjoyed living there for 18 months.
Okay. And you knew after Staff College and this intervening time period, he would be CO.
Yes.
Of VA 95.
VA 95.
Okay.
Yes.
How did you feel about that assignment?
I was more thrilled than anyone could ever imagine about the fact that he was realizing a lifelong dream to be CO of a squadron.
Right.
And it was just wonderful. On the flip side, I didn't want to go back to Whidbey.
Why not?
And because I didn't want to go back to those cold, awful people and that cold, awful climate.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really didn't. And away from much culture, away from the ability to get to interesting places and interesting things,
mm-hmm.
In a modicum of time. The farthest I had to go when I was in Virginia Beach to get to anything that was different was maybe a half an hour,
right.
Sometimes 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
45 minutes to get to Williamsburg, Colonial Williamsburg, and that was fun. 20 minutes to the beach. There were entertainments and things very, very close by.
Right.
It was just a very nice atmosphere. And on Whidbey Island, you're on an island, and,
right.
And with a bunch of provincial people. And so I was, and it's 2 hours to Seattle. And I was not at the time. That's how things were. I think it's really come a long way now.
You were going to be there for 3 years, too.
Yep.
Okay.
So I was not looking forward to that, and I didn't want Kenny to know. I did not want him to know. So I would have a good cry every day,
mm-hmm.
a real good one. And I'd do it when the kids were at school and he was at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd turn on the shower. I'd turn on all the water in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd let myself have my good cry, and then that would be it.
Hmm.
Then I could put on my game face.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
does he know this now that you... I imagine he does.
He found out then, and that's what I'm about to do.
Oh, okay.
I was supposed to go to the doctor one day for something that we didn't know what was going on
mm-hmm.
with me.
Right.
And I was in the bathroom having my cry later that it was early afternoon, and because it was a morning appointment, all of a sudden, I heard him coming up the stairs, two stairs at a time, and he wasn't tiptoeing. And I thought, oh, I've been caught, because I knew he could hear me.
Mm-hmm.
He, all of a sudden, he opened the bathroom door of the master bath and said, "You've got cancer." And a very tearful me said,
mm-hmm.
"No, I just don't want to go back to Whidbey Island."
I imagine he was relieved.
He was terribly relieved.
Yeah.
So we both had a good laugh, and he said, "Okay, what can we do to make it so that you want to go back there?"
Mm-hmm.
And and we worked out a plan, and was going to make me happy was going to be making it so that we had an agreement that I could go into Seattle at least once a month, and just feel like I was not in no man's land,
mm-hmm.
And that we would live either in town or on base, and. That, far as he was concerned, those were easy.
Okay.
And that was what we did. It turned out we got base housing, which we had a wonderful, wonderful setting. It was a wonderfully happy town. The children were they couldn't have been happier. And they both loved being outdoors, and you could be outdoors a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The weather was far better than it was when we were there previously. Which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had learned to cope with the weather better. I certainly had, and it never bothered the children anyway. And Kenny was gone a great deal, but we had a lot of close support. And even though there certainly were challenges, I was better equipped to handle them. And very quickly, became part of a group of ladies who also wanted to get off the island, and many of them had lived there almost all their Navy lives. We got monthly tickets to the Seattle Repertory Theater, and drove in for the Wednesday matinee once a month, and it was just wonderful, very freeing. And then, as I said, we had wonderful neighbors, and the support for just on all levels was terrific. And even though Kenny's Air Wing was not stationed at Whidbey, it was not a lonely time, which was just wonderful.
Good. Tell me about your duties as a CO, as wife.
You transition. You always hope you transition from being the XO's wife to the CO's wife. And traditionally, you watch the CO's wife as XO's wife, and you do what you learn the rest of what you're supposed to do from her, so you can carry this on. Now in the 2000s and in the 1990s and I think sometimes in the 80s. There are CO's Wives courses that are given. That wasn't true in the 70s. But as I've said before, you looked and learned.
Sandy, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let me interrupt. I'm sorry. Before we get deeper into VA 95, tell me about your personal feelings. And we've touched upon this a bit in the past, but while you were there on the East Coast, before you transitioned out to Whidbey, about the fall of Saigon and South Vietnam in 1975, tell me what you went through and what you all thought.
It was devastating. That was when we tried to get Mr. Na to come. We tried to get in touch with him so we could sponsor him and his family, and we were so let down by the Red Cross and our government. But he did get out. It was awful. It was just awful. We felt it was so wrong and so unnecessary. Even with Henry Kissinger, doing all the good job that he did, and so forth. It was a big letdown. It really, really was.
Did you see a difference in Ken and his, after that happened?
No. Nope. Because he had seen it coming. It was like a bulldozer, and it wasn't going to stop. And if I think any clear thinking person who had been involved in it could see what was going to happen.
Okay. Well, go ahead with VA 95 and your duties as CO's.
I might add that Kenny's he's a realist and a fatalist.
Right.
So I think that. That combination has allowed him to survive a lot of things, and he can compartmentalize very well. I think that works generally in his favor. There's sometimes he catches the dickens from me about that because I don't compartmentalize very well, but I think that's a male-female thing too.
Yes, I think so.
Okay, so, but continuing with VA 95.
Sure.
When Kenny took over as XO, I was reminded once again of how different Whidbey was from the East Coast, and it really, for some reason or other, it drew a lot of different people. I don't know how to put it, but any more than that, maybe people felt a little bit freer out there to express themselves in a variety of ways. And I'm talking about mostly women, sometimes the men, but I dealt mainly with the women. And I'm talking about officers' wives right now. VA 95 had a whole cadre of very young wives who were, this was the bra-burning era, the I'm free, I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And these young women did.
Well, this is the time period of the Equal Rights Amendment and
yes,
all of that.
Yes. This is that time period.
Yes.
And they really, individualism was the most important thing as far as they were concerned. And so helping the CO's wife whip them into a unit was interesting. And our CO's wife was much younger than me. She came from a naval officer's background, but she was very conflicted. You know, her mother had done things more as I had, apparently, and yet here she was. She was actually a part of this generation that was made up of the JGs and lieutenant's wives. That's the age she was.
Mm-hmm.
And So the former CEO's wife had encouraged her to become a part of that, and actually had not done a lot of teaching her how to be a CEO's wife.
Mm-hmm.
So I was acutely aware of the fact that she was the CEO's wife. Period. That was it. So as soon as we had the change of command, I made sure to go over to her house and have coffee with her and essentially put our feet up and look at each other in the eye. And I said, Susie, I know I've had more experience at this than you, but I'm not going to take over. This is your turn. And you tell me what you want me to do, and that's what we'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And I will only say anything in a cautionary tone to you if I see that something is getting out of hand. Because I had heard that about some of the antics that these young women had carried on on the cruise prior to the one we were headed into. And it sounded like things that you might do on a college weekend. They certainly weren't thinking that they were representatives to the public of the Navy, let me tell you that. They weren't acting like ladies,
mm-hmm.
not even ladies having fun.
Okay.
So if I had to be a little motherly at all of my 30 whatever years old, I could handle that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that really set a very good tone for us. And I mention that because Susie told me later, just before she and her husband left the squadron, she said, I didn't expect that, and I expected just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for doing that. And I held to it. I really did. We developed a very nice working relationship. And then when it was my turn, I really made sure that the squadron wives were run along the lines that I had really wanted it to be run on. And because things had improved while Susie McEwen was CEO's wife.
Can you tell me, Sandy, what those lines were that you wanted to run the
that
squadron upon?
That I wanted
upon?
To see?
Yes.
I wanted to make sure that we had good communication and understood what good communication meant. I wanted to make sure that if when anybody went out of town and the men were gone, that we knew where to reach them. I mean, even if it was having their parents' phone number and knowing that they let their mother and dad know where they were.
Right.
That was these young women were against that.
Why were they?
Mind you, this is before cell phones and so forth.
Right.
I'm independent.
Oh, okay.
I don't need you to keep up on me. Well, we weren't going to keep up, you know, on where they were because we wanted to keep up on that. We weren't keeping tabs on them. It was simply that I had lived through wartime.
Right.
And I knew that they didn't need to find out that their loved one had gone down or been killed or whatever it was by having some newspaper person contact them. So I was very, very clear about why we needed to know. And in meetings, you know, we had squadron-wide meetings every month. We changed the meetings from daytime to nighttime because at that point there were women who worked, and sometimes it was easier to get a babysitter, and they didn't want to use the base nursery. So that was an accommodation that had been made. I organized them. I just personally don't feel like you can do much of anything without some sort of organization in this kind of setting. And so they each had a responsibility. And this is 40 women each having a responsibility. These were intelligent people. And if their responsibility was only to make sure that they contacted the next person on the list once a week, they had a responsibility. We did things together, and I made a point of that. It's so easy for groups of women like that, and I guess groups of men too, but groups of women especially. I mean, you're going to have your own friends within that, but you need to be more than just acquaintances with women, other women, in such a setting. And so getting together frequently is doing something, not just getting together for the sake of getting together. I think helps make the cliques seem less cliquish.
How often would you get together?
Well, we had a night meeting once a month.
Once a month.
And then we'd try to have a get together one other time a month.
Okay.
And that would be anything from some kind of outing, maybe all going out to dinner at the same place, or going to a movie together, or taking the children into a great ice cream shop in another town, having a picnic during the summer with maybe a softball game attached or some other such thing, or going to a different site to see something, just so we could bond a little bit more. That was important to me early, and I figured that it would be important to them. It was very interesting too that a crew was killed, and it was on a bombing run, and we were all in town, and I had made sure with the exo's wife that we had then, Rosemary Toff. She and I had sat down and talked about this, and I don't know that she had ever been prepared like I thought it was necessary to organize this before. But we had pre-planned this because I had seen it done by both Shirley Southworth in VA 72 and Carol Barish in VA 115.
Mm-hmm.
The two of us sat down and went over every single officer in the squadron, and which of us, saying which of us was closer to which one. And so we split up the crews. We split up the BN and the officer
mm-hmm.
crews. And so that if a crew was ever lost, that immediately one of us could go to that person. And it worked. We had, she went to the BN's wife in this case, and I went to the pilot's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to immediately start the work that we needed to do with our part of arrangements and that sort of thing.
How did Ken react to that?
Oh, he knew that was what we had done, and both he and the XO knew.
Right.
We didn't do it without talking it over with them.
Okay.
And mainly because I felt so strongly that we needed to really be ready and not trying to put everything together at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't seem fair to the other wives and the family
mm-hmm.
to do it that way. So we were able we handled it, I think, rather well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that didn't mean that we didn't both interact with both wives.
Right.
And both sets of families. We did. But it was just that there was an immediate conduit for each family.
How long did you kind of stay on the ready after this this accident?
I would say about 10 days.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think of when it was. It was during the month after, and I cannot recall exactly how long after it was. Kenny put together a squadron picnic and softball game,
mm-hmm.
and it was I don't remember if it was the officers versus the enlisted or exactly how it was done. But it was a true squadron thing, and made it very clear that it was mandatory for everyone to come.
Mm-hmm.
Very very seldom did anyone do that kind of thing anymore, and to do that with this particular group, as I've described them, was really something.
Mm-hmm.
But they all came, and the reason he did that was because we had seen the problems that were caused when grief wasn't dealt with openly,
mm-hmm.
and when there wasn't some coming together of the unit or the family or
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and so we had this real honest to goodness full blown picnic. And everybody let off steam, and it, in a very positive way,
mm-hmm.
and it was very healing. It really was. And that was not long before I think it was not terribly long before the squadron left on cruise,
mm-hmm.
and it was their final cruise with him as CO. And
mm-hmm.
while he was in in the med, he had the change of command.
Right.
And after we moved back to Virginia Beach, which was our next duty station,
mm-hmm.
I received a lovely letter from one of the junior officers,
mm-hmm.
Thanking us for showing them what true squadron life was like. It was really, and it was from a young officer who I never would have expected it from. Kenny never would have expected it from this young man, and it was, that was worth whatever we had gone through to get that one letter. It was just absolutely lovely, because we knew what we were doing was right, and I knew that I was going against the grain of the time by insisting on my own that things be done a certain way, and that we do things in a coordinated way. Whatever we did, we weren't a splintered group of cliques, and that was what a lot of the squadrons were being allowed to be. And that you need the cohesiveness when you are in a squadron setting. You did then, you do now. And I don't think that will ever change.
Right.
Really don't.
Okay. Were you comfortable leading the squadron? I know that might be a...
Leaving or leading?
Leading this,
yes.
The squadron.
Yes, I was. It was, I was so proud of Kenny. So terribly proud of Kenny. And it was something the two of us had worked for.
Yes.
It was the realization of a real dream. And so... Yeah, I was totally comfortable in that setting. I had been well prepared for it, and it was fun. And when I was comfortable to the point where when he was comfortable too, when he would leave for a flight, it didn't matter where he was going. He'd always fly over the house. And pretty low. It was pretty neat. The A6 was a loud plane, so I knew he was coming. And I dash out. There was a knoll a berm, I guess, in the back of the our backyard. I dash out to the top of the berm, even in my robe, and wave like crazy to him. The children, if they were home, would do the same thing. The dog would be barking. There's Dad. And that was a big thrill. Now Whidbey Island was still a relatively small area and small base. And anytime I saw anyone from the senior officer's row, because we were not on senior officer's row, which was just great, we shouldn't have been, the comment would be, "Well, I noticed that Kenny left this morning." Because, of course, they heard the plane go over and probably heard me. But they all knew that he was the one who was gonna go over the house.
Right.
And now there were other COs who lived out on base, but they chose not to do that. But we were in this together, and the children were excited about it too. Just it was a real excited, proud, wonderful, fun time.
Yeah. Now, when he left Whidbey Island, when you all left, what was that like, leaving that post and kind of the pinnacle of that command, of working your way up to that, both of you working for this, and then having that success, and then stepping away and going on to another station?
Well, it was very, very interesting. Of course, he came back from the East Coast to get us.
Yes.
Because, as I said, he relinquished command at sea in the Med. In that brief span of time, the children and I had talked about the fact that if we could remain on Whidbey Island for one more cruise, because he had an almost immediate cruise after we got back, that would just be heavenly. And when I told him about that, we were taking a walk on the beach, and I thought he'd fall over. and it turned out that was not possible for a variety of reasons. So we were all very sad to leave Whidbey, very, very sad to leave Whidbey. And it was the transition as far as leaving being a CEO's wife
mm-hmm.
was, I think, probably made a lot easier for me because command was finished, and I had either a month or 6 weeks before I had to move, and so there was a downtime for me, which, I mean, not down emotionally or anything, but it was a gentle relaxation time.
Mm-hmm.
I could just be busy doing a lot of things. And so it was not a difficult transition as far as that was concerned. I was concerned that he might miss flying so terribly because he had flown so intensely for so many years.
Right.
I had certainly known of other men who just missed it so terribly. They had a variety of negative reactions. But here again, compartmentalizing things worked in his favor. He did get to fly occasionally because he had to fly a certain amount of hours to keep up flight pay for a certain number of years.
Right.
And his last flight, I remember, was in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I saw him going over Virginia Beach Boulevard, over Kmart, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister, who's now deceased, was with me.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger sister. And Sharon and I were just thrilled to pieces that we got to see him. And that turned out to be his last flight. So it was really, really just a spectacular memory.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he handled all that just wonderfully. He really did. And I must say, although I missed him smelling like JP5 all the time,
mm-hmm.
It was the transition that way was just fine.
Okay. Was it difficult for you to step away from that leadership role and go back to taking kind of a second seat again?
No. No. It was, I had too much to do. We had, even though we were ship's company because we were aboard Indy,
mm-hmm.
very fortunately, it was a great CEO's wife. And she was of the era that I was from, and of course a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
But we spoke the same language. So it was very, very pleasant, and Kenny was ops officer at the time,
mm-hmm.
or assistant ops, I don't remember. But anyway, I know that whatever, I was the most senior wife in that department who wanted to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very, you know, I asked the CEO of the ship's wife if it was okay if I did organize something for Christmas. She said, you do whatever you want. Whatever you can get the wives to do, you do it. So in that department, I called all the wives, and we made stockings for all the officers. And even the ones there was one who on religious basis, the wife didn't want to make a stocking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had Kenny ask, because he had to do this before they left on cruise. So I had Kenny ask the husband if he minded such a thing, and
mm-hmm.
he didn't mind at all, because this wasn't religious. This was merely a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And We made them for, there were a number of wives who did this, and I made up a list of things that could go in the stockings, because I didn't know these women,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't think that we wanted something untoward to go in a stocking. That we all went together and filled these stockings, and Kenny took them with him and got a Santa Claus hat. And on, I think it was Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, and I don't remember how he got Christmas songbooks, but anyway, we got Christmas songbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And so on either Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, that department had a special dinner, and they celebrated Christmas. And the men were just thrilled, absolutely thrilled. And the wives were tickled to death that was done.
Mm-hmm. Was this in 79 or 80?
This was in, let me see. This was Christmas of 79.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sandy, why don't we take a break for a moment?
Okay.
Just a sec here. Okay, Sandy, continuing. Go ahead and tell me a little bit more about the time when Ken was on board the Independence and where you were and what you were doing.
Okay. I think I haven't mentioned the children, and I think I need to, because this was a huge transition for them.
Right.
To come from living on Whidbey Island and coming back as older children to Virginia Beach. It was a difficult transition for both of them, though that had not been expected, especially on our son's part. He was younger. And we were disappointed terribly that he could not go in the Boy Scouts. He had been in the Boy Scouts in Whidbey, but because his father could not be active with him, he was not welcome in the Boy Scout troop that we could go into in Virginia Beach.
That's very surprising.
It was. It truly was. It was shocking. At the same time, he had been on a championship soccer team, and a third grade team, second and third graders, who had beaten the sixth and seventh grade club champions on Whidbey Island in a wonderful game in the snow. he was not welcome to be on a soccer team in Virginia Beach because I think we had missed the sign-up period just because of the time we had moved, and nothing could be opened up for him on a team. So that was really difficult, because it was important for this little boy to be involved in sports.
Of course.
So that was difficult, and he missed his daddy terribly. He was 10 years old, and would have bad dreams, and it was about the time that the odd comment would be made negative about Vietnam. So it was a tough time for him. Very fortunately, we had close friends who had been in the Naval Academy and in other settings with us over the years, and they lived close by, and so that daddy would try his best to at least alleviate some of these situations for
mm-hmm.
Kenny.
Right.
One day Kenny had taken himself and his dejectedness. I guess he was just gonna, I didn't know if he was gonna run away or if he was exactly what he was doing. But I knew that he was marching smartly, probably down King's Grant Road, trying to assuage his bad feelings. And I called them, and Buzzy just happened to be driving down the road and said, "Hi, what you doing?" And they started talking. He said, "Let's go get an ice cream."
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of nice support really did help. Then for Annalise, it was a crushing. She was changed for her. She came from the ninth grade and being top of the class there into the Virginia Beach school system, which just was incredibly advanced. And they insisted on putting her in advanced classes, and I knew she was not ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because Whidbey Island, while they had a good school system, did not have anything near what Virginia Beach did. And the besides being a young 10th grader and being thrown from a very comfortable, relaxed existence into this East Coast, more sophisticated world, it was a hard blow for her. Mm. Really, really was.
How much contact did you have with Ken when he was gone?
Only through letters.
Okay.
And, of course, I didn't want to worry him. And so I don't remember how much I told him about this, mm-hmm. but it was by the time he got home, Kenny was pretty well worked out. Annalise was in the throes of she had gone into bulimia by then.
Wow.
And I had gotten a job, which we had always said I would never do, but I needed to do that, and it was part-time during the day, mm-hmm. In the mornings, and it was in a lady's home who lived not far from us, and I was her personal and private secretary.
Mm-hmm.
So it was doing things. Plus, she was a researcher with a basis in history, and so I helped with that, too. So I was happily getting paid under the table,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't take me out of the neighborhood or away from anything for a whole lot. But there were a lot of changes when he came home, and in that way, in that he wasn't coming home to the little teeny happy family that had no problems and everything went just fine, which he had experienced always up until now. So I'm sure that had to have been a bit difficult for him.
Mm-hmm.
How
did he adjust to your changes you had made at home?
He adjusted well to mine, and he didn't quite know what to do with Annalise's, and we didn't have very good guidance, so we sought some. That was tough.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very hard time.
Well, she I assume she was able to move through that.
Took a long, long time.
Okay.
And I think she, at almost 40 years old, is still working with it.
Mm. Okay.
A lot of that is just personal.
Yes.
And I would never say that it was the Navy life that did this to my child. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's correct. I think that it's a very individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Mack came through it, but she's never forgiven her father for not being there.
Really?
I think he would tell you the same thing.
Have they talked about this?
How do I say it? I think it's been thrown out and never discussed appropriately, if you will.
Okay.
It just never seems to get to the point where it can be a reasoned discussion.
Mm-hmm. Is this about the specific time when he was on board the Independence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That it's specific to that.
Okay.
There was also, at this period, he came back, and he sort of came back into her life when she was 14.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 14 years old is a huge transition for any child. And I think there was so much thrown at her at once that, you know, some personalities handle it well and some personalities don't handle it well.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's just a very tender personality that did not handle that real well.
Okay.
And I didn't know quite what to do. And the help we sought, the professional help we sought, didn't handle it very well. So we didn't know what to do. We just didn't know what to do. And I don't know how much I'd ask him about that if I were you.
Okay.
I think he'll tell you a modicum of mm-hmm. it, and I think I'd leave it at that.
Right. Okay. But
Kenny Mack
mm-hmm.
moved on as a person.
Okay.
As a human being, and as as his child and my child, and he is he just really and truly appreciates, admires, and respects everything that went on during the time his dad was in the Navy and since. And he just looks at every time Dad was home as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But that was how that was his personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he looked at and accepted things. And every change to a new duty station was an opportunity to make new friends. It wasn't leaving the old.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always the one who, he'd know everybody in the neighborhood, and everyone would know him before we got unpacked. He would get on his tricycle when he was old enough to go two or three houses down, and he'd pedal two or three houses down and say, Jenny Flagg. and when he was old enough to be on his bicycle, he'd ride around the block and meet everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back and tell us about him. And it would be, oh, you're Kenny Craig's parents.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just two very, very different children.
Yeah.
However, it made their bond extremely close. Which not their differences, but the fact that we let them know early on that oftentimes they would be the only friends that they had.
Mm-hmm.
When we were changing duty stations or whatnot. So they better learn to be good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they took that to heart. And that has lasted all through their adulthood.
Well, I was extremely impressed with Kenny when I met him in January.
Well, thank you.
It was obvious that he looked up to his father and to
yep.
you and had great respect for both of you. And he seemed to have taken the Navy life very, very well.
He did. He absolutely did. He grabbed onto it and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely loved it.
Well, tell me about when Ken came back in 1980, when he finished that tour on board the Independence.
Well, he was greeted on board ship. He was greeted with a letter from me that I got to him by the first person who I knew would see him. On the way in, it was blown out there by helicopter, saying, guess what, I have a job.
So you wanted to prepare him before...
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay.
At least give him a couple of hours to know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was... we all... bless his heart, he came back into home life and did as he always did.
Mm-hmm.
And life went on. I think it was, I want to say it was the next cruise. And those cruises sort of fade in and out for me.
Sure.
And I honestly don't remember if we had three cruises on Indy or two, to tell you the truth.
I'm looking at my notes.
I guess
it looks
he had two. Two. The last one was 6 months, and that was
right.
That was very, very hard. That was a difficult cruise.
This is in 1980 before he came back to Norfolk.
The 80-81 cruise.
Okay.
Okay, because the also, they got a new CO.
Mm-hmm.
His reputation went before him, and it was not positive. But it seemed like, you know, things could be worked with. And I honestly do not remember if that was on the first cruise that they changed skippers or just before the second cruise,
mm-hmm.
to tell you the truth. But I tried to put some of this out of my mind because it was so unpleasant. But everything went along just fine as far as the Wives Club was concerned and all that kind of thing was concerned. until, and this is, they were gone again. This was the six-month cruise, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we were at an officer's wives get-together at the home of one of the officers who lived in Portsmouth.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the wardroom had changed quite a bit. And there were women involved in the wardroom who were, well, I don't know. Well, of course, we were all from different communities and things, but there were women who were certainly a lot different than in their way of thinking than I was or would ever be.
Mm-hmm.
Really catered hard to the CEO's wife, which, I mean, that's fine if that's how they want to be. I was polite and enjoyed myself, and when, you know, I was there. And when there was a phone call, and it was a phone call from the CEO, and his wife went into the kitchen to take the call, and the tenor of the get-together had been very pleasant before then.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, she came out of there, and she was not... She was so cold to me, ice cubes would have been happy next to her.
Hmm.
And I had no idea what in the world had gone on. Just no idea at all. But I knew that he was a hard man. And I thought, well, maybe... maybe he had upset her some way. And at the time, we always, this squadron wives got, or not squadron, I'm sorry, the shipboard wives got together
mm-hmm.
by having a, it was a, what do you call it, a gourmet night.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd pick a different country. And the hostess of the evening had charge of what country you'd cook something from. And there'd be a little group to cook, or everybody would cook, depending on how many people were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you would each make something from that country. And so that was how we got together. It was very pleasant. But anyway, we'd always have a little meeting with that also. When at some time after the meeting, I got a letter from Kenny sort of explaining what had gone on. And by then, I had heard from one of the other wives what had gone on, and he had been demoted. And I didn't understand what or why or anything.
Who had been demoted? The CEO?
Kenny.
Okay.
Yeah. I never did understand it. But as far as I was concerned, it was a blow, and it's very hard because of the way the CEO's wife had handled it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't know anything at all and just did not understand what was going on, and I couldn't talk to Kenny, it just blew me away. It really did. I felt like I needed to see him, and I needed to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I insisted that I would go over to see him when they were in Australia. Well, in those days, it cost an arm and a leg to do that,
mm-hmm.
and they were going to be in Mauritius first. But I knew it was—I knew it was doable. So I called Navy Federal, and I got a loan.
Hmm.
And I was not going to spend savings, mm-hmm. but I figured out how I could pay back a loan before he got home.
Mm-hmm.
So the long and the short of this thing was that he said, "No, you cannot come." And I was devastated. I was furious. I was everything negative one could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
Had we been able to really talk about it, we would have, and we've talked about this since, we would have worked it out a lot differently, and we would have really, really talked about it. But talking on the telephone in those days with him was very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And
why was that?
Well, it was just difficult for him to express himself fully on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It really was, and it made him feel so bad. As I know he's told you, after he got off the phone, that was when he was unable to put his family out of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be very hard for him and very sad, and we knew that. We needed hearing over on our end, but it never got any easier. Knowing all the years we were in the Navy, it never got any easier knowing that other families got phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't. Because just to hear his voice was for each one of us absolutely, that was one of the most curative things we could ever have.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked negatively on him, and he was the one who was lying, or he was the one who was gone and not able to hug each other and that kind of thing. So we dealt with it on our end, and he dealt with it on his end. But in this particular instance, I would have loved to have known about email. It would have solved a lot of situations.
Sure.
But we didn't have that, so we had letters. And sometimes, letters, there's no continuity always to them because they get delivered at different times. And anyway, finally, through a telegram, he let me know that I was not coming. Well, the real reason was there was twofold. We were a little short of money right then.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as we were concerned, because we were looking at an awful lot of things pulling on our money. And it was money was tight in the U.S. at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a reaction to the times, as well as trying to be cautious on our own and yet wanting to do so much. And I had gone over to Spain to visit him during the previous cruise, which was just really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents had stayed with the children. But going over to Australia was far more expensive. I
mm-hmm.
mean, thousands of dollars. And so money was a consideration. And he had never, never, never okay my getting a loan. Like I did. But I already had the money in hand.
Did you tell him about it?
I don't think I told him until he got home.
Okay.
or maybe I did finally tell him about it at the end. Then for him also, he knew the schedule. But he was dealing under the old Navy rules, and I guess the Navy was still dealing under those rules then, and I kind of wish they would now, but they've come into reality that everything can't be kept a secret. So ship's movement was secret, and you did not talk about, or confidential or whatever it is, you did not talk about ship's movement over the airwaves. You didn't write specifically about it. So you almost had to discuss plans for travel practically in code.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep within the rules. So he knew that the chances for their making port in each of the ports at which I would have met him
mm-hmm.
on this horrendously expensive trip were those chances were very iffy. and he couldn't really say that. He just had to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was probably the first time he ever heard me cry over the phone. I was upset and angry and mm-hmm. so forth, and just heard no.
Mm-hmm.
But that was okay. I didn't return the money. We got a gorgeous living room rug that we still have. It was a Persian in pastels,
mm-hmm.
and we enjoyed immensely. And for that, I did either write him or send him a telegram and say, "You have now invested in." and then I arranged to have the kitchen redone.
Okay.
So positive things, and we laugh at both of those things. They were both done out of spite and as paybacks.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, having the kitchen redone enhanced the value of the house. And at least I didn't go do something ridiculous with the money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most important part of the whole thing is that we talked about it,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to communicate through it. But that CO did everything he could, and apparently had always done everything he could to make everybody's life miserable. And I held my head up through the whole thing and went on and did everything with the WISE group that I had always done.
Mm-hmm.
And though it was difficult, but I was not about to let her or any of the other wives who would love to see a crack in the surface know anything about the way I felt.
Now, why did Kenny get demoted?
I don't know. And I never did understand it. And I don't know if it was a demotion or if he had been temporarily in the position he was in and then been demoted, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, and I know I said demoted, but that's the only way I know to put it, because
right.
it was never fully explained to me.
Hmm.
The wives in the squadron who wanted to be gossipy and so forth had their own way of expressing it, and I'm sure that Kenny had explained to me the whole deal, and I still never understood what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And had it been handled appropriately, which would have been for the CO's wife to, after the phone call she got after the meeting,
mm-hmm.
Privately to either call me or come by and explain to me what had gone on.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have been, I'm trying to think, maybe the man who was ordered in was ahead of him in number. That may have been it.
Mm-hmm.
And what got to me was he was demoted. Which was not a demotion at all, but it would have been just a natural, normal thing that you have someone senior to you come in to the department, and they take their rightful place, and you take your rightful place. And I imagine that that's what happened. But because of the personalities involved, with the CO's wife and the CO,
mm-hmm.
in my mind it became demotion.
Okay.
And I'm sure he would tell you, no, it was not. This is what it was. And you know, as I've talked it over with you, I think it was probably just involved something as simple as linear numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was handled badly.
That sounds like it was.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And years several years later, that CO was passed over twice for admiral.
Mm-hmm.
We drank champagne both times. It was the only time we ever celebrated someone's failure. But he made life miserable for a lot of people.
Right.
Really did. Kenny handled it all very well. He really and truly did, because he knew how things really should be.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough for him, though.
Right. Well, Kenny goes on very shortly after this to make captain.
Yep.
And
in fact, it was during that.
Was it during this cruise?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It was either during it or right after that he made captain.
You all were based in Norfolk, is that correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. And you were there until 1983?
Yes.
Until you go overseas.
Right.
What was it like for him to be captain? What did that change anything that you did?
No, we got more money.
Right. It's never a bad thing.
That's right. It didn't change a thing. By then, I was set with what I was going to do. And we had a wonderful group of friends. Most of them were Navy. In fact, mm-hmm. I think all of us were the majority of us were Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was just a delightful, absolutely delightful time. Very freeing. I guess this was when he was a watch officer for the sink lamp fleet or whatever it was.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I could be as active or not,
mm-hmm.
as I wanted to be. And so I did things with a group of wives that put me with not only American Navy wives, but foreign Navy wives,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of fun. And so we spilled over into the NATO wives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, and that was fun. So it was a great time. It really was. Up until we left in 83, we had a real good time. Really
so
did.
Why don't we take a break?
That's fine.